Harry Lynette, and today's episode of my podcast will be the season one finale. This was around the number I wanted to do for the first season, which was one of the only things that did actually go to plan in regards to my planning of this season. As I said last week, my original plan was to wrap up the first season sometime in mid-December, and then take Christmas and New Year's off, and then in late January, I'd come out with the first episode of season two. And initially, the plan was that this episode, the one you're about to listen to, was going to be the season two premiere. However, I ended up taking a few weeks off in between different episodes, which is nobody's fault but my own. There were various reasons that I'd rather not get into. And that meant that season one would have to continue into January before concluding. But this specific episode topic was always going to be a January episode, solely because of the timing being incredibly relevant to the topic. So instead of it starting off season two, it's going to be rounding off season one. And that episode, today's episode, is all about the music of 2020. Yes, that's right, I'll be trying my best to play music critic, and I'll be discussing all the best songs, the best albums, and the best discoveries I made last year. What's funny is that my New Year's resolution for 2020 was actually to expand my music taste over the course of the year and actively get into more artists. And this is something that I did achieve, which is frankly a miracle and a half as far as New Year's resolutions go. And like, as far as 2020 goes, like anything good happening in 2020 is, well, you're just lucky, aren't you? No one ever really achieves New Year's resolutions, though. But a big reason to why I achieved my resolution is that 2020 had some of the best music. I actually heard someone describe 2020 as a terrible year with a great soundtrack. I'm not sure whether if it's due to the circumstances of the pandemic or like the stars aligning as far as trends go, but 2020 was the perfect year to jump headfirst into music, and I feel incredibly lucky to have engaged with it. Now, something you need to know about me is that I am a pop music fan. It is my bread and butter, and the exploration that I did this year was predominantly in that genre. But what's fun about pop is that it's a huge genre with a lot of intersections and influences, so I still like to think my taste is somewhat versatile. But I'm going to leave that one up to your interpretation. I don't want to look like a clown here. Something I tend to do with my music is consider it along a spectrum, one end being intellectually stimulating and the other being fun and enjoyable. I think that it's good to have a mixture of both of these things. I think it's good to challenge yourself and engage with critically acclaimed work and see how you like it. But I also think it's good for the soul to just enjoy some light and fluffy music. It's just fun. So expect to see a lot of different stuff in this list, a combination of both of those things. And as far as your job goes, if you want to go and listen to any of the songs or albums that I talk about in this episode, even if it's just to understand the context, that's up to you. That's your choice. I know that sometimes it can be overwhelming having a ton of different albums and songs thrown at you, and particularly if pop music just isn't your thing, that might just be something you don't want to do, and you don't have to do that. There is no required reading for this episode, or required listening, I really should have said. But if you do want to dip your toes into some of my favourite albums, or any particular things I recommend, I will be pointing out three specific songs as recommendations for each of the albums I talk about. And like, that's just something where you can start small with it, and you don't have to feel pressured to jump into the whole thing. Whatever you do, I hope you enjoy this episode, and now let's get into my picks for the best music of 2020. Let's begin with the first album that I really loved in 2020. If you listen to episode 4 of this podcast, you'll be no stranger to the fact that I really loved Dua Lipa's Future Nostalgia album. In that episode, I did talk a bit about the album, though I also deliberately missed out on some things, planning ahead, you see. I wanted to have stuff to talk about in this episode regarding the album, and there's a lot that I haven't covered yet, so don't worry, this is not just like a retread of the stuff I said before. I've already talked about Dua's first album and the evolution from that to Future Nostalgia, so we're not going to cover that again. I've also talked about how I feel some of the songs from Future Nostalgia are examples of pop perfection, and that, I think, is something that takes time to really prove, so technically, I think now is actually a better time to talk about the album and the specific tracks, especially when you stack it up against the rest of 2020's offerings. Just to clarify, we're going to be talking about the original CD. We're not counting the later additions to streaming or any of the remixes, though I am going to briefly go back to Club Future Nostalgia later on. But as for the original album, we start with the title track, Future Nostalgia. And it's a little weird. It's funky, it's experimental, and it's a very fun start to the album. It almost sums up the album while also not really sounding like anything else on it. The verses are spoken word and braggadocious, her British accent comes through a lot, and there's a very distinct mood of, like, not abrasive, but a little cocky and definitely confident. That's something that pops up and down later down the line in another song. Lyrically, it's a bit strange, which I think in some songs would stick out like a sore thumb and be prime fodder for a pophead's roast, but the delivery and the atmosphere really sells it. There's a reference to American architect John Lautner, there are strange blends of metaphors within it. Immediately you can tell there's been growth from album one, just from the sheer assuredness of the song. Did I say that right? Assuredness? Yeah, because that's what it has in there, assuredness. It's also a clever example of feminism within the album, which is sold through the lyrics and through the production. It's an offbeat start, but a great way of telling you the message of this era's Dua Lipa. Next, we have Don't Start Now, and I said in episode 4 that this is an example of pop perfection. And honestly, tell me I'm wrong. Just tell me. This song came out a year ago, and it's still as fresh as it was on release day. It does something that happens to be a theme throughout the whole album, and that's taking classic sounds and bringing them to the present day. In the case of Don't Start Now, it's a blend of 80s disco with present day Dua Lipa and a little bit of 90s. The production goes hard, there's cowbell in there. Like, you couldn't tell me 2 years ago that a perfect pop song could have cowbell in it of all things, but now I'm all on the cowbell train. Obviously there's more than that. There's strings, snares, hand claps, so many different pieces that could end up being overused and clog the whole thing up. But it's all measured so well. The other big thing about this song that I think works so well is the evolution you can see from it. If you compare it to New Rules, which wasn't Dua's first song, but it was like a breakout hit, there's clearly an evolution and an elevation with Don't Start Now. The production's more interesting, the vocals are more confident, even the lyrics are stronger. It's like textbook getting the feedback on your last project and applying it to the next one. And even though there are a lot of strong tracks on this album, I think that this one was the best one to act as that warning shot for the new era as the lead single. It's just the perfect way to do a comeback. I'm going to go through some of the other tracks more quickly. As much as I love them all, I don't want to go on like massive monologues about every single one. So some of them are just going to be more brief thoughts. I want to talk about Cool for a minute. This song, now stay with me, sounds like the opening of a John Hughes movie. Like, hear me out here. You're walking out of high school, the sun's out and it's peeping through the trees, it's a warm and bouncy day, you're around friends. Like, that's the power this song has. I can feel that carefreeness from the song immediately, which isn't always that easy to do. And then Physical is another song that I'd consider to just be pop excellence. It's frantic, it's full of lovely synths and some banging percussion. There's an intensity to it, like you're being chased in a roller rink with lights flashing around you as you pivot around corners. There's a sense of urgency. It's such a good song, and my Spotify clearly caught wind of this because in my 2020 Wrapped, Physical was my most played song of the year, because it's friggin' amazing, that's why. Levitating is another excellent song, and though it's been a tad overplayed by being on the Morrison's Christmas advert this year, thanks a lot Morrison's, it still holds up as another great disco track. If you like a good weird synth, this is the one for you, because the opening synth on this one is like nothing else. The song's funky and well produced with so many, again, little elements that all come together to make something that's balanced out well. The next song is Pretty Please, which is quite literally placed somewhere in the middle of this album. Get it? It's a lyric pun. I understand you won't have got that if you haven't heard the song, but what can I say? I put it in the script and I liked it. But after a few days of listening to this album and not really being as hyped about this one, this ended up being one of my favorites. Like, it's quite different from the other songs in that it's slinkier and moodier and a little more stripped back production-wise, but this stripped backness is used to emphasize the sultry vocal performance, and it's still got plenty of production on it, especially on the bridge, which is really great. It's just a little more sparing, which I think works. It's nice to have that little moment of more sparing production. Now we're going on to Hallucinate, which is just plain exceptional. It is giving me 90s Kylie Minogue, and as a big Kylie fan, that's the best thing a song could be. Duo described the song as her festival song, and that's a pretty accurate descriptor. It's the most dance-oriented song on the album, I think. And it's the best combination of synth, disco, and a touch of psychedelic to make something really special. Love Again took a little more time to grow on me, but once it did, I was in love. It goes back to more of a 70s sound with a modern touch, and the opening strings alone are something to get excited over. It also feels like the most mature song on the album while still playing along well with the sassier tracks. The next one is Break My Heart, which, aside from having one of the best music videos of the year, it also happens to feature one of the best samples of the year. The familiar guitar riff from Need You Tonight by INXS doesn't feel like it's screaming at you, "I'm a sample," because it fits this track like it was made for this track. And it's surrounded by great elements too. There's an awesome bass line and disco violins, which, as a phrase, disco violins surely is pretty incredible to hear. And to end it off, if the pre-chorus of this song isn't making you belt in the shower, I'm not too sure if we can be friends. Sorry about it. Now, we need to talk about Good and Bad. Not everyone likes this song, and plenty of people actually consider this a skip. To that I say, I respect your opinion, but it isn't mine. I love Good and Bad. Some people think this song sounds out of place, like it's come from a different album, which I guess I understand, but I think it comes from a different point of nostalgia. We've had a lot of 80s, we've had some 90s, we've had a touch of 70s, and this one feels like a dip into the mid-2000s. I'm particularly thinking like Amy Winehouse or Lily Allen especially. This really reminds me of a Lily Allen song. And maybe I'm just a sucker for that kind of song, because I think this really works for me. The chorus is a bit repetitive, yes, I'll give you that, but I think the delivery sells it. And again, another gorgeous pre-chorus. Like, I don't know what she does with pre-choruses specifically, but it's magic. So there you go. There's my unpopular opinion. Good in Bed is good. I will say one thing about this album, and that is that Boys Will Be Boys is kind of a dud ending. The production isn't as interesting or well implemented. The lyrics start off well in the first verse and then get progressively less good by the end of it. And overall, it's just not the same caliber as the other tracks, in my opinion. I do love the line, "I should have stuck to ballet," though. Again, the delivery sells it. But that's 1 out of 11, which as far as albums go, that's not a bad ratio at all. And one thing that we got out of this song was a killer remix. I did mention earlier that I'd go back to Club Future Nostalgia, because there is one other track from the remix album that I want to mention today, and I didn't mention it in episode 4, and that track is the Zach Witness remix of Boys Will Be Boys, which in my mind is the definitive version of the song. Where the original lacks in production, the remix practically oozes it. It's bolder, it's punchier, the sampling is great, the use of the vocals is clever. That more than makes up for the madness of the original song. As far as closing the original album goes, I would have much preferred having the original version of Love Is Religion as the closing track. It just would have left a better last impression for the album, been suitable as a closing track, and been more consistent with the other amazing tracks. So, overall, I feel like Future Nostalgia is a mighty step up and a half for Dua Lipa. And this is coming from someone who liked quite a lot of the singles from her first album, particularly the pre-release singles. This feels like less of a collection of songs that got released and happened to be shoved together on an album, and more like a unit of tracks that were created together to work together. It's fun, it's engaging, and it's got genuine technical merit. Now, there has been talk of a side B from Future Nostalgia coming sometime in 2021, and judging from the unreleased songs that have been leaked, it looks like there's some more great music from where that came from. Can't believe I butchered that. But that's for another day. My three picks from Future Nostalgia are Don't Start Now, Physical, and Hallucinate. But if you've heard Don't Start Now enough times to not have to go back to it, then the fourth Ranger Award goes to Pretty Please. And my three picks from Club Future Nostalgia are, unsurprisingly, the Mark Ronson remix of Physical featuring Gwen Stefani, the Blessed Madonna remix of Love is Religion, and the Zach Witness remix of Boys Will Be Boys. To sum it all up, long live Future Nostalgia. Next, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite discoveries of 2020, who also happened to release one of the best albums of 2020, and that artist is none other than Rina Sawayama. The thing that really got me into her music was her song Comme des Garçons, which happened to be one of the pre-release singles from her debut album, Sawayama. Now, if you want an album that is exciting, intriguing, intelligent, and personal, one that blends genres and sounds with such ease and finesse, then you have come to the right section of this episode. This album is probably the most intelligent release I've listened to this year, yet I never felt condescended to, or like there's a greater meaning I'm too uninitiated to get. Because the lyrics in this album are very personal and really tell this story of someone dealing with their identity, looking at their family and their upbringing and where they belong, how they lie within a pool of expectations and stereotypes. And all of this is taken through so many different sonic approaches, whether it's an R&B track, a clubby dance number, a new metal song, or a simple ballad. It's such a diverse record that does so much, but that voice remains distinct throughout. Rina is so good at taking a genre or a style and making a track that embraces that, but still lets her voice and her perspective do the talking. That's like some galaxy brain energy, and I wish I could do that. It's also a real testament to the production, which is predominantly done by Clarence Clarity. His work with Rina is just exceptional, and I'd love to see how that works with all sorts of artists. So let's talk about some of the tracks on this album. So Dynasty is the opening track of the album, and Snakeskin is the closer. Dynasty has almost like this Evanescence-like quality, and it feels like this cinematic entry into this incredible story. It starts like a ballad, but then you soon start to realize that it's much more than that. The drums kick in, and it becomes this pop rock jam, kind of reminiscent of Christina Aguilera's Fighter. You also have some excellent guitar work, which is always welcome in my books. And then Snakeskin has a similar kind of feeling, but in a more electronic and experimental way. It's still got that cinematic, dramatic feeling, which makes such a good bookend to this album. And it's similar enough to feel like a callback, but it's different enough to be its own distinct track. It also ends with the same piano track you hear in Lady Gaga's Married the Night video, which any throwback to that video is a good one, but it feels especially appropriate in closing out such an album and such a story as this one. Now I'm going to brush on some of the singles, which happen to be grouped together nicely in a package of three. The first one is Excess, which, if I had to describe it with a sentence, I'd call it Pussycat Dolls New Metal, because it has that feeling of like a 2000s R&B pop track with some more abrasive new metal elements that give it just the right amount of chaos to reflect the subject of the track, which is consumerism. The blending of these styles is done so expertly that it's as catchy as, for example, like a 2000s Fergie song, but it has that extra edge and bite to make the satire and the critique really stand out, without overpowering that initial catchiness. The next one is STFU, which is a full-on new metal jam. You got a taste of it in Excess, but now you're getting it full-on on this one. At first, I was a bit put off by how intensely metal it is, but it really started to grow on me after time. And one of the reasons to that was the music video. That's kind of where you see that, oh, this is about microaggressions, and everything started to click from there. And that's the point where you're just like, hell yeah, shut the fuck up against all those little demeaning comments and microaggressions that Asian people go through. It makes it such a worthwhile song to have on the album. Next, we have the one that started me off on this journey into the world of Rina Sawayama, and that is Comme des Garçons, Like the Boys. This is the epitome of club-ready electro house goodness. All I can really say about this song is that it makes you want to be a goddamn supermodel from the minute you hear that opening synth. It's celebrating that unabashed confidence while also looking at the way gender plays into all of that. Yeah, I know I sound like an English lit major saying all of that, but it's so seamlessly integrated into an absolute bop of a song that it just works so flawlessly. The songs on this album are so varied in what style they take without making the album feel like a mishmash of different songs from different albums. There's pop in there as an underlying genre, but it's blended with hip-hop, hair metal, dubstep, all sorts of different styles to make up the whole picture. Love Me For Me is a great pop song with a touch of synth and hip-hop influence, whereas Tokyo Love Hotel takes that same pop and gives it almost a gospel feel, along with some lovely synths for good measure. Rina can express her thoughts through a grungy rock track like Akasaka Sad, while still meshing with the electronic elements of the album, just as well as she can do a bubblegummy electro rock throwback with Paradise In, complete with video game sound effects, a saxophone solo, and a key change. She can even do it with just a simple synth pop ballad. Bad Friend is such a universally relatable track, with simple and effective production that makes it something anyone can appreciate. Elton John even said that this is a song Madonna would kill to have, which, honestly, he's not wrong. But I want to talk about one track specifically to round this off, and that song is Who's Gonna Save You Now? This song is, in my opinion, an incredible example of stadium rock. And by that, I mean a rock song that was made to sell out stadiums. This is something you scream, sing, and headbang to like there's no tomorrow. In fact, once we're able to go to concerts again, you know, that will hopefully happen one day, one of my dreams is to go and see Rina Sawayama live, and specifically to be able to hear this song performed live, because it feels like it was made to be done live. You want to be doing that cheering of Rina, Rina, Rina at the start. You want to be furiously headbanging when the chorus starts. You want to join in with all of those vocals, even the backup vocals. And when that key change kicks in, you want to absolutely McFreakin' lose it. That's the energy that you get with this song, and that's the energy I hope I get to experience live one day. So, that leads us to the difficult moment where I have to suggest my three picks from the album, because not only would those picks not reflect the diversity and the versatility of the album's content, but it also wouldn't even begin to really describe Rina's talent or potential. Nonetheless, I will try my darndest and make my picks. My three picks from Sawayama are XS, Comme des Garçons, Like the Boys, and Who's Gonna Save You Now. And that was one of the most difficult selections I've made in a long time because so much of this album is that good. What I'd suggest in this case is see which genre you gravitate towards and have that correspond with what you choose to listen to. For pure pop, I'd say Comme des Garçons, Love Me For Me, and Tokyo Love Hotel would be your choices. But if you prefer something more experimental, I'd go for Dynasty, Akasaka Sad, and Snakeskin. If you prefer rock, then I'd go for SDFU, Who's Gonna Save You Now, and probably Paradise In. Like, this album is very versatile, and I like the whole damn thing, so it's difficult to pinpoint to someone exactly where to start. But you know, just see what works for you. Either way, I'm very excited to see what's next for Rina Sawayama. I can't wait to see her next project. Just anything that she does, and hopefully, one day, I will finally get to see her live. The other big discovery I made this year, as far as music goes, was a very talented duo who released an exceptional album this year. That duo is Chloe and Halle, and that album is their second studio album, Ungodly Hour. Before I listened to this album, my knowledge of Chloe and Halle was pretty minimal. I knew that they were signed to Beyoncé's record label, Parkwood, and that they were apparently very talented. I'd also knew that Halle Bailey was going to be playing Ariel in the upcoming live-action adaptation of Disney's The Little Mermaid, which, even from what I knew, I was happy about because I'd heard she was a great singer, and I was dreading that Disney would pull an Emma Watson and stunt cast someone who couldn't really sing that well and would have to be auto-tuned to absolute hell and back. But I knew, oh, she's apparently an amazing singer, so that's a relief. We've got an Ariel that can sing. That's good. And then I heard all of the buzz about Ungodly Hour and a bunch of people saying that this had Album of the Year potential, and that's when I started to dip my toes into the album. Once I got into Ungodly Hour, it became incredibly clear that this album was something very special, and that Chloe and Halle's talents were formidable. For one, I was kicking myself for not getting into them earlier. They already had an album out previously, which I'm thinking of giving a listen sometime over the next few months. And there'd been that bit of buzz already there, but the minute I stepped into this album, it was clear that I was seeing talent. Like, these two girls exude talent. I want to clarify, there are a lot of talented artists out there, But there's a difference between artists that have talent and artists that exude talent. Chloe and Halle exude talent from every pore, which you can tell almost immediately from their vocals. Their voices are heavenly, and I don't throw that word around for any artist. And what Ungodly Hour does is put those beautiful voices alongside some masterful R&B production. I feel like R&B is a genre I want to get more into in 2021, but this as a starting point is a great place to begin. The album was executively produced by the two girls with some assistance from Beyoncé. There are four songs on the album with production solely by Chloe Bailey, though you have other producers and songwriters on the album like Scott Storch and Victoria Monet. So let's get into it. Part of me wants to combine the intro of this album with Forgive Me, like it's done in the video for Forgive Me, but on the album, they are separate tracks, they just have like a seamless transition. And this is a first impression that really shines, because Forgive Me is one of my favourite songs on this album. The production feels rich and engaging while still feeling contemporary, and this is just the kind of song that works just as well on a critically acclaimed album as it would do on the radio, or like in a club. Similarly, one of the other big singles from this album is Do It, which, though it has a remix featuring Doja Cat, City Girls, and Mulatto, I still think the simplicity of the original makes it just that bit better. It features more trap elements and is kind of perfect for getting ready and hyping yourself up. It's got such an understated confidence to it. I'd also say it is great for a club setting, which, if we could go to clubs right now, that would be pretty great, but pandemic. There are also some more playful and sassy songs on the album, like Tipsy and Busy Boy, where you see this like playful energy from them. And these are lyrically some of the most enjoyable, while still keeping with the stunning vocal delivery and backing it up with some great production that doesn't overpower the vocals, but complements it. Not just that, but Tipsy has some excellent production that was produced solely by Chloe Bailey. There are also some songs that are just perfect vocal showcases, like Don't Make It Harder On Me, which displays their beautiful higher registers in something I feel like just about anyone with a heart could appreciate. Some songs aren't as easy to pigeonhole and just come across as exceptional R&B tracks with beautiful vocals, as always. Lonely is a great example of this, which is just as catchy and trendy as it is soulful. The way that they have that balance locked down is a valuable asset. But possibly my favourite track is the title track, Ungodly Hour, which is so expertly put together and such a damn good song with amazing production, which suits the vocal style so well. It's like nostalgic, but it's also fresh. I'm losing my will to speak because it's that good of a song, but it's also so fresh, which is another valuable asset. To be able to hark back to the music you love while also making it perfectly in date for today, it's something that so many artists, plenty of them, get wrong. And to see Chloe and Halle master it here is amazing. Maybe my favourite part of the title track is the absolutely angelic vocals during the bridge. The only way I can describe it more is to just tell you to go listen to it. Finally, I want to touch on the closing track, which is called R-O-Y-L, or Rest of Your Life. This combines the R&B style, particularly on the verses, with something I really love, which is this cinematic feeling on the chorus. It's almost foreboding the way that the vocal delivery and the backing vocals contrast in the chorus. And obviously the vocals are beautiful because, of course they are, you know what to expect at this point, while still having that playful energy in the verses. It's an unusual ending because it keeps up that energy that's been consistent without really bursting at you like a grand finale or like petering out with a whimper. It's just a showcase of what makes Chloe and Halle's music amazing. So, I've talked about the album and how I love it, but I also want to briefly touch on the performances too. Because let me tell you, COVID did not stop these two from serving some of the best live performances of the year, while staying safe and sticking to guidelines, you know, like you should. And it's not like they've been doing the same performances every time either. They change things up and they just keep delivering excellence. They bring the live vocals, the charisma, the outfits, the sets, all of that in a pandemic. They're unstoppable, and I'm all here to see them take over the world in 2021. For the album, my three picks are Forgive Me, preferably with the intro attached to it, like it is on the video, then Tipsy and Ungodly Hour. For live performances, because yes, I'm gonna suggest some live performances for you to watch from Chloe and Halle, otherwise I would be letting you all down. I'd suggest Do It from the Jimmy Kimmel Show, which serves both grit, cinematography, vocals, and production. And then the live version of Forgive Me from Chloe and Halle's YouTube channel, where they just said, you like those vocals? How about we make them even better? Because yes, they did that. Live vocals even better than the studio version. And finally, their performance of Ungodly Hour from the VMAs, where they delivered some choreography that would truly make Beyoncé proud. If I can leave you with one final statement before the next section, that is to not sleep on Chloe and Halle, because the amount of talent there is not to be underestimated. 2020 was the year of a brand new Lady Gaga album, and as you might expect, I was excited to see what she'd come out with. Would we be seeing a continuation of her more stripped back work in Joanne and the soundtrack for A Star Is Born? Would we be seeing an exploration of a new territory altogether? Or maybe, just maybe, would this be the return of Gaga going full dance pop? If you picked the last one, it's probably because you already knew that. But you're right. So let's talk about Chromatica. For me, this was an awesome release, not just from a genre standpoint, but also lyrically. It's not just a happy dance pop album, even though you might think that from first listen. It's essentially dancing through the pain and the struggle and often the trauma that's affected us. It talks about finding self-love, getting to grips with your mental health, finding yourself after going through the ringer. All of that set to some thumping dance beats and a distinct 90s influence. One thing that's been a point of criticism for the album is that the production is almost too cohesive for its own good, that the tracks end up being too similar to each other. I feel in two minds about this. First off, I love the tracks on the album, and I think Blood Pop's production is excellent. It really understands the vibe of the album, both in terms of exploring genre and the subject matter. However, I also can't help but feel like there could have been more variation and also more experimentation. It's definitely more of a safe dance pop album than the likes of Born This Way and Art Pop, and I would have liked a couple of really experimental tracks in there to liven things up a bit. I believe that Gaga worked with Sophie at one point during the album's production, and I would have killed to hear Sophie's tracks on Chromatica. That could have been the thing that gave the album that extra quirk and kick. But either way, I do really like this album for what it is, and let me explain why. I'm going to talk about two groups of different tracks from this album. First, I'm going to cover some of the more high-profile songs and singles, and then I'm going to go into some of the album cuts that I think are underrated. So let's start with the first single from this album, which, if you remember, got a very strange release. Yes, this happened in 2020. It's been a long year, hasn't it? It got leaked, and then a while after, it got an official release with its video, and that song is, of course, Stupid Love, which I feel did decently well in the charts, but I feel like a lot of people will have forgot about it already. I still love it, and I've got it on my shower playlist. I think it is a great dance pop track that feels both radio-friendly, yet still bold in its production. I don't think it represents the whole album, but it made a great taster of what to expect, and I love it for that. The next song is Rain On Me, featuring Ariana Grande, and this is not just an excellent collaboration, but a great display for both Gaga and Ariana. The production is very house, and it's a great display of the house influence that's peppered throughout the whole album. You've got spoken word bridge, which feels like a classic Gaga moment, and both Gaga and Ariana have great vocal performances. But of course, gotta shout out them whistle notes. Yes, we do get some great whistle notes in this song from Ariana. I'm glad it's done so well on the charts, and I think it's a real moment of euphoria that people kind of needed during the pandemic. Obviously, Lady Gaga's song isn't going to cure COVID, no matter how many memes we make about it, but it's going to give people something cathartic to enjoy, and that's valuable. The last of the high-profile tracks I want to talk about was only a promo single, but I think it's safe to say that Sour Candy did get a lot of coverage. I've only recently gotten to a couple of Blackpink songs, and I'm very, very impressed. But even this track is an excellent showcase for them. They get to sing in English and Korean, and vocally they suit the production so much. I'm not sure if they've done much in deep house music, but they suit it to a T. Gaga's vocals and spoken word portions are also just excellent, making something that's catchy but pretty experimental. Probably one of the most experimental parts of the album. Sour Candy is a real favorite of mine, and my only issue with it is that I wish it was just that bit longer than 2 minutes and 37 seconds. Guess I'm craving more of it, huh? But now I want to talk about some of the tracks that didn't get a single release, but I think are worth an extra word or so, which is a difficult ask because there are a lot of excellent tracks on this album. Enigma is an absolute blast to listen to. Alice has some of my favorite production on the album. Free Woman is probably the most cathartic. And of course, that darn transition between Chromatica 2 and 911. Yep, I'm basic. But the two best tracks, I think, are Replay and Babylon. Replay is probably the most underrated as far as I'm concerned. Having a sped up, pitched up sample of It's My House by Diana Ross gives the chorus exactly what it needs to absolutely slap. It's hypnotic, it's slightly sinister, and you can feel the panicked emotion within the delivery without it being too obvious. It's just excellence through and through, and the only thing I don't like about it is that people keep sleeping on it all the time. The other track is perhaps more of a fan favorite, and that is Babylon. This is the closing track, and this album goes out with a high fashion bang, with what I think is the closest thing we have to a 21st century Vogue by Madonna. It's classic Gaga. It's got the production to make it feel aggressive but fashionably blasé. If this song doesn't get a video, I feel like there's a case for reporting a significant robbery. So there are my thoughts on the songs of Chromatica, but I wanted to close out this section with more of a general talk about the era. The Chromatica era was planned to be massive, with allegedly one of the best rollouts planned for an album ever. We would have had more music videos, more live performances, we would have had Gaga at Coachella, more award shows, which collectively would have probably set the gay community to combust in bright pink fluorescent flames. But alas, COVID happened, and that meant that we couldn't have that perfectly strategized era. And instead, we got an era that awkwardly stopped and started, giving out amazing pieces of content, but never getting past that initial disjointed feeling. Either way, we got some amazing new videos, an excellent album, and that VMA performance, which I'm still not over. That's something great in itself. As for my three picks from Chromatica, that would have to be Sour Candy, Replay, and Babylon. Hopefully, we'll finally get a full version of Babylon's House Labs mix sometime this year, if we all just believe. Or if we all just buy Chromatica Oreos, I don't know. Either way, something to look out for. Another cohesive album I wanted to highlight in this episode is the most recent album from Kylie Minogue, aka the one true Kylie, not the secondary reality TV personality. In the title, she promised us disco, and she gave it to us in full force. We got a dance pop album that fully embraced the disco throwback and provided some much needed escapism at a point where the world, and also I, had pretty much had it. It's hard to single out tracks for this album because this is one of those albums that is so cohesive and so dedicated to its sound, to the point where it's a full experience. It's less about single songs and more that the whole thing is just this non-stop escape into dance pop. But first, I'll discuss the singles because those were the first impressions from this album. Say Something was a track I was unsure of at first, but upon repeat listens, it really solidified itself as not just a favourite, but one of the best tracks of the year. I think the structure of the song confused me at first, but once you know what to expect, it's this glittery, fun song that just makes you so happy and gives you that energy that you need. And one of the best parts of the song, as far as I'm concerned, is literally the first few seconds and that echoey build-up, which is one of the most magical musical moments of 2020, point blank period. And then we have Magic, which was an immediate favorite for me. Not a single re-listen was needed for this one, let me tell you. People have pointed out how the beat of this song sounds similar to Katy Perry's Chain to the Rhythm, but like, better? And I love Chain to the Rhythm, but there's something about Magic that just enhances that beat and surrounds it with better production. It's the perfect disco pop song, and it keeps up that escapism that makes the whole album amazing. I also really love I Love It, which is even more up-tempo and just ups the energy for a pure disco banger. Again, those little bits of instrumentation just make it that bit better and elevate it above a typical homage. The next track I want to talk about is Real Groove, which is, again, keeping with that disco pop feel of the rest of the album. I'm sure I've said that 100 times. But also feels like a throwback to classic Kylie with those synths and the vocoder that feels like it's just stepped out of light years. We also get some exceptional higher register vocals and a breathy bridge, which just displays some signature Kylie vocals. Like, the thing we all needed this year was some familiar escapism, and Kylie is serving it to us perfectly. Out of the rest of the tracks, I want to highlight a few of them. I could talk about this all day, but I'll just do a few. Miss a Thing is such a dreamy song. Supernova literally feels like you're being taken to a club on another planet. And again, some killer vocoder. As for the deluxe edition, my favorites are Fine Wine and Spotlight, especially the criminally underrated Spotlight. And then we have Dance Floor Darling, which has the best tempo change I've ever heard in a song in my life. And this was an excellent song already, but then you have that bridge and the building up to the countdown, and then the countdown comes, and then that guitar that rips as the tempo shoots up. I was mind blown. I was absolutely knocked for six. That tempo change could kill a small Victorian child. And for that, I'm so thankful. Again, I could talk about the whole album and all of the tracks in a lot of detail in this section, but then I'd be here even longer, and this episode is already long enough as it is, so let's just get on to my picks for the best tracks. My three picks for the best tracks from Disco, as much as that's a difficult ask, are Magic, I Love It, and Dance Floor Darling. That being said, you could play the whole damn album one track after the other, and it would be a complete favourite in itself. And I know this kind of sound, the classic Kylie sound, isn't for everyone, but if it is, then this is a must listen. This is a drop everything, drop all of your worries and your cares and the stresses of the real world, and dive into the closest thing you'll get to a night at the disco. It's that kind of album. Is it groundbreaking? No. Is it venturing into new territory? No, but as far as I'm concerned, this is exactly the kind of album people were wanting from Kylie, and in the throes of a global pandemic, this is exactly what we needed from Kylie. Of course, there are some other albums I want to briefly touch on, so let's get on to those. I'll be much briefer with these, as these aren't full-on favourites, but rather just examples of solid releases. We got a second volume of Dedicated from our Lord and Saviour Carly Rae Jepsen, which people were half hoping for, half expecting, because obviously there'd been a side B to Emotion, but Dedicated side B was practically a whole album in itself, and not just this accompanying EP. I think overall, the tracks on the original Dedicated have stuck with me more collectively, but there are still quite a few tracks on side B that I love just as much, and by that I mean like half the album. But with the first Dedicated, I was losing it over like 80% of the album, and Emotion side B I consider to have no skips. But then again, that is 8 tracks compared to like 16 or 17 on this one. I guess when an artist has a catalogue with so much quality, their next efforts are going to be judged a little more harshly because you expect so much from them. Still an excellent album, and I have plenty of favourites from it, but my three picks from Dedicated Side B are Summer Love, Stay Away, and This Is What They Say. However, Let's Be Friends is on the Japanese version of the album, and that was a single before the album got released, so yeah, let's just include that one too. It's excellent. Now I want to briefly touch on Katy Perry's new album that we got this year. Smile was definitely a rocky era in terms of people's reactions and expectations for the album, but I think she was kind of tread unfairly a bit during this era. The thing is, a lot of people didn't like the more experimental and introspective sounds from Witness, and they wanted her to go back to the fun, simple pop that she'd been most known for. But then when she went back to that fun, simple pop with Smile, people were complaining that it wasn't interesting enough and it was basic. Like, I know there's a middle ground, and I feel like it is a worthy criticism to want an artist's music to go somewhere in the middle, but at times it felt like Katy couldn't really win this era. First off, out of the pre-release singles she chose to include in the album, she picked the best two. Never Really Over is an excellent pop song that is both well-acclaimed, yet also underrated as far as the charts go and the general public go. It's just excellent pop song. And then I absolutely love Harleys in Hawaii, which the general public paid complete dust to, and for that I will never forgive them, because it is an excellent song. So I'm glad it's those two on the standard edition of Smile. Out of the new tracks, I think there's a lot of emotion in them, and I got that impression quite quickly, pretty much immediately. There are just some beautiful songs on there, even if I don't necessarily go back to them too often. But also, there are some bops on there, because this is a Katy Perry album. Of course we have bops. My three picks for this album are Cry About It Later, Tucked, and Champagne Problems. A quick honourable mention to the Target exclusive track, High On Your Supply, which is just a fun little slightly irreverent song that's nice to have on the disc. It's on YouTube if you were wondering. So this year was also the year we got to see Ava Max release her debut album. This was something I was curious to listen to. I feel like people shit on Ava Max a lot for having a more by-the-book pop approach with her music. And while I understand this POV, it feels like it's good to also have some standard electro dance pop there in your repertoire. You know, it's fun and it works for a reason. And in her debut album, Heaven and Hell, there's some great tracks of that style. I'm not into all of it. I feel like a lot of the visuals for her songs are quite muddled and just need a little bit of finessing, even though it's not really much to do with the music. Also, I'm really not into the whole trivialization of psychosis and being crazy that I've been seeing this era. But also, I think the production on this album is great. It's a fun album for anyone who's craving pure pop. And most importantly, Ava Max can sing. Like, she's got the talent, so I feel like this debut album could be a sign of more promising things to come. It could be kind of like what Dua Lipa did with her first album, bringing out a load of singles first, then putting a few of them on the eventual album. I think some of the singles that Ava released that got on the album were good choices. I absolutely love Torn, and Salt's a fan favourite that I really like. But maybe we didn't need So Am I on there. Maybe we could have had Freaking Me Out on there instead. But either way, I'm seeing the possibilities here. There's quality already there, but it just needs to be properly harnessed and finessed. She's got the vocal ability already, but there's potential for more engaging production and more streamlined visuals. And hopefully she will escape all of the Gaga comparisons that she's been getting. Nonetheless, if you want a fun pop album that touches on that late 2000s, early 10s sound, then this could be worth a listen. My top three picks from Heaven and Hell by Ava Max are Naked, OMG What's Happening, and Torn. All great examples of that sound that she's really good at working with. I'm intrigued to see what else she can do. Now, I'm going to briefly touch on Folklore. Yes, I listened to Folklore eventually, even though I'd spent months after its release skeptical to whether it was really my thing. It was actually the release of Evermore, the other album Taylor Swift dropped this year, that made me get up off my arse to finally listen to the album. And no, I haven't listened to Evermore yet. Sorry, please don't shoot me, Swifties. I'll probably get around to it in a month's time, just to let Folklore settle a little more on my palate. God, that sounded pretentious. And that is almost kind of a bit of a reason why I hesitated for so long. I kind of assumed that this was going to be something very acoustic and very wordy, and not really my thing. And in some ways, yeah, it's more acoustic and wordier than, say, Reputation, but I was surprised at how much it resonated with me. My comparison, and you'll have to stick with me here, is that it reminds me a bit of Lana Del Rey's last album. Like, when I was going through it, I got the feeling that, oh, this is a bit like Norman, which I love that album, so that's a great feeling. Collectively, it just put me in a really great mood while I was listening to it. I felt calm and somber. Still happy, but just a more chilled out and assured feeling. Obviously, I tend to gravitate towards poppier stuff, but I like to have more laid-back stuff on my radar, too. I've already said Lana Del Rey, but songs from people like Solange and SZA, even some of Marina's stuff goes into that category. But for me, Folklore was a really great album and was just as intellectually stimulating as it was, like, pleasant to listen to. I think the writing on this album is one of its biggest strengths, and I like that it takes such a departure from her more radio-friendly music. It feels like the right way for Taylor Swift to go, and I think this style really suits her. So overall, I think that, yep, it did deserve its Album of the Year nomination at the Grammys. And my three picks from Folklore are some of the ones I've been going back to, which could change in the coming months, but for now, my picks are My Tears Ricochet, Mad Woman, and The One. I specifically want to point out The One as being the opening track, and also being the perfect way to let me know that, hey, you thought this might not be your thing, but this might just prove you wrong. Which it did. Finally, we have a late entry to this list, and one that I've only just really started appreciating, and that is What's Your Pleasure by Jessie Ware. I'd never heard any albums from Jessie Ware before, but I'd heard a lot of talk about how this is a great disco album. A lot of the talk has been like, oh, if you liked Future Nostalgia and Kylie Disco, you have to listen to What's Your Pleasure, so I did. And I'm really impressed. It's a different atmosphere compared to those other albums. This one's a lot more of a grown-up disco album that feels more nocturnal. It's moody and smoky, but still upbeat and so evocative of classic disco in a different way. I've never had an album be so specific in its sound, yet also be so versatile in how it's executed. I kind of felt a bit of a Janet Jackson Control era sound, which is one of my favourite albums, so that's bound to be a win for this album. But there's also touches of Bananarama, Donna Summer, even a little Sade. It's exactly the kind of album that shows you a new side of a genre you thought you knew. Like, I love what Dua Lipa did with Future Nostalgia, and I love Kylie Disco too. But what Jessie Ware did with What's Your Pleasure might be the most surprising disco album this year, because it feels like this time capsule that reflects a modern sensibility and mood. As for my picks for this album, my three choices would have to be Save a Kiss, Soul Control, and the title track What's Your Pleasure. All I'm going to say is that if you thought you'd heard the best of 2020 disco, let me tell you, you haven't unless you've listened to this album. Trust me. Finally, now is the time to take a break from albums and go on to songs. This is just going to be one big section listing a bunch of singles and random tracks I really enjoyed this year. And again, if you want to check out any of these songs, go at a pace that works for you. I want to start with two songs from the Birds of Prey soundtrack that I really loved. The first of these tracks is Diamonds by Megan Thee Stallion and Normani. This is just an excellent, excellent song that I actually heard for the first time from the credits of Birds of Prey when I saw it in cinemas. You know, back in ye olden days. And it caught my attention, so I listened to it separately and I just fell for it. Normani is the best member of Fifth Harmony, debate literally anyone else, and I was 5 seconds from putting Motivation on this list until I realized it came out in mid-2019. Maybe that just goes to show that the song hasn't aged even today. But as for Diamonds, Normani's vocals are just top tier in this song, and it all goes with a production to make up a sultry chorus, pre-chorus, and bridge. But we need to talk about Megan Thee Stallion for a minute. That is talent right there. I feel like if I had a resolution for 2021, it would be to listen to more rap, as there hasn't been any rap albums I've really listened to this year. But next year we're changing that, because Megan Thee Stallion absolutely bodied this song. She has a great flow, the enunciation is there, and her verses just ooze personality. 2021 is going to be the year I really get into more of Megan. She's just released an album, so there's a place for me to start. The other song from Birds of Prey that I've been really loving, even before the release of the movie, was Boss Bitch by Doja Cat. 2020 was the year I got into a lot of Doja Cat, and as much as I want to put Rules in my top songs of 2020, that's another 2019 release. That being said, Rules is that good of a song, maybe it transcends the whole year thing and we can just put it on the list anyway. Because that's a song, let me tell you. But back to Boss Bitch, which is a masterclass from Doja showing you how to do a power anthem. The lyricism is excellent, the production backs it up masterfully, and again, personality. That can really make or break a rap verse, and Doja just knows how to implement that in her music. I can't wait to see what she does in 2021. I've heard whispers of an album, which I hope are true whispers, because I'm always here to see what else she does. Speaking of Doja, I want to briefly touch on the best song from Ariana Grande's album Positions, which in my humble opinion is Motive, featuring Doja Cat. I liked the Positions album, but I wasn't blown away by it. There are some nice songs on there, but overall, I'm still Team Sweetener, folks. That being said, Motive is a great track on its own, and the feature from Doja just makes it even better. Now, you're probably thinking, is WAP going to be on this list? Yes, the answer is yes, of course WAP is on this list. Other than its gargantuan cultural impact and recognition, it's also an excellent song. The production is great, but what makes this song is the lyrics and the delivery. Cardi B is the perfect example of a rapper oozing with personality, and she uses that perfectly in this song. I feel like people doubt her skills a lot, but I think that her personality in itself is a skill, and the implementation of that really adds to what she can put on a track. Her verses are clever and acerbic and a lot of fun, and then Megan comes in with absolute fire. Like, the song was already great, but then you add Megan Thee Stallion into the mix. That just takes it to a whole other level and adds that extra punch. Megan is an exceptional rapper, and if this isn't enough proof for you, I'm honestly not sure what to tell you. That is talent, right there. And having a song as outspoken and bold as this one, getting such a cultural impact and being so sexually empowered, that's amazing. Of course, some people talk shit about it because a lot of those people can't handle something like this, something so confident about sexuality and so open about it. That's going to piss some people off, probably because they don't have anywhere near that kind of security in their own self. But the quality of the track really speaks for itself. It is a damn good song, and it is very much worthy of this list. The next songs I want to talk about are all by Meghan Trainor, which could not be more different. And I think some people are too proud to admit this, but Meghan Trainor makes some great music. Fight me. We got a new album from her this year, Treat Myself. And there are a bunch of songs I really loved from it, particularly from the deluxe edition that came out later in the year. I was shocked with just how much I loved Make You Dance, You Don't Know Me, and Underwater. Some genuinely great pop pops. Then from the original version, I'd recommend Blink, Evil Twin, and Genetics featuring the Pussycat Dolls. Speaking of the Pussycat Dolls, it's hard to believe that React by the Pussycat Dolls came out this year. But no, it didn't come out this year. It came out last year, you dingus. I'm still in 2020 mode, can you tell? But this song still holds up as an absolute banger, having come out a year ago or so, because, you know, it is 2021. I need to remind myself, but it's still an absolute banger, and I love it to bits. If you can fit a chair into your shower, you might just be able to create the choreography. However, I cannot do that, sadly, but at least I can whip my hair furiously like I am, in fact, Nicole Scherzinger. One can dream. A single I've been loving recently is Lie Like This by Julia Michaels, and she's done a whole lot of songwriting for Selena Gomez, Britney Spears, and just about any relevant artist out there. This song is just another excellent pop song that's fit to slip in any playlist. Go ahead, I dare you. We got two great singles from Zara Larsson this year. First off, we got the amazing Love Me Land, which is just perfect from the first synth to the last note. And also we got Wow. And I personally prefer the remix of Wow with Sabrina Carpenter, which has some excellent production and delivery. I enjoyed Miley Cyrus's new album Plastic Hearts, but the one track that really stuck with me was Prisoner featuring Dua Lipa. It's just a great pop rock track, which makes you wish you owned a motorbike. We also got the comeback single from Marina, which was The Fabulous Man's World. This song gave me some Fruit vibes and also a little bit of Electra Heart vibes, which is great because I love Fruit so much, and Electra Heart is also great, with some calm but engaging production. And there's also some expertly biting lyricism from Marina, which is really one of her strengths. But of course, vocally she pulls it off with ease. The voice is there. She's got the talent. I don't know how to tell you it otherwise. I can't wait for the album, if it's going to be as good as this song. My hopes are getting up there. This year I did a lot of discovery into Ali and AJ's recent music, and I have to say they're really doing something amazing with their new stuff. 2020-wise, my absolute highlight was Joan of Arc on the dance floor, which kind of has that darker dance pop energy with just some magical production. I also really loved quite a few of Tove Lo's songs this year, though the one 2020 release I loved from the expanded version of Sunshine Kitty is Sada Bada Kula, which is just a perfect slow motion power walk anthem. If you want to feel like you're out for vengeance and doing it like an absolute icon, this is the track for you. Finally, I want to briefly touch on JoJo, who is a massively underrated artist who you'll probably know best for the 2004 classic Leave Get Out. She released an album this year, and she's really leaning into an R&B direction that just fits her like a glove. I mean, she's talented, but this new direction that she's going into, it really suits her a lot. Out of the tracks from the album Good to Know, I really loved Man from the Standard Edition, which is carefree and calming but still assertive. And then from the expanded edition, I really loved What You Need, which is just another banger full of acerbic energy and the soulful voice that JoJo's renowned for. I want to give the album, especially the deluxe version, another listen through, because I feel like some of those tracks are still going to grow on me yet. Still potential for them. And with that, we've gone through a whole list of 2020's best music. Of course, I'll have missed out on some tracks somewhere down the line, and if you have suggestions for me to listen to, feel free to let me know. But this isn't the outro. No, we've still got something to confront. 2021 is going to be perhaps an even more uncertain and unpredictable year than 2020 was. And even with that, there's always whispers of what's going to happen music-wise. Who's going to rise from obscurity to receiving critical acclaim? Who's going to fade into the background? And who's going to have a great resurgence? Who will be putting out albums this year? Some of these questions are harder to answer than others. there are a lot of rumors going around about when Adele's releasing her next album, and I guess we'll see if a lot of artists start delaying their albums, because usually when Adele's on the way, as an artist, you clear the path, because that album's gonna smash regardless of who else is competing for the top spot, and I cannot wait to see it. There is, of course, even more speculation about when we're finally gonna get Rihanna's new album, R9. We didn't get it in 2019, we didn't get it in 2020, but apparently it is a thing, so it's just a matter of waiting to see what happens. Maybe she'll just keep teasing everyone for the whole year while releasing new shades of Fenty Stunner lip paints. Who knows? Also, there's a chance that we might be seeing a new Lorde album, and if anyone can rescue 2021 from the shithole pile, chances are it's going to be her. And of course, Beyoncé too. Maybe Beyoncé is going to release a new solo album this year. And maybe it'll also come with an incredible visual album too? Question mark? Who knows? Let's hope it's one. Other than that, we have Lana Del Rey's new album on the way, which is going to be interesting. Norman was a very acclaimed album, and I'm not sure if this new album's going to have the same reaction, but who am I kidding? I'm absolutely going to see what happens with the very oddly titled Chemtrails Over the Country Club. Next up, Zara Larsson's going to be putting out her album finally this year, which, judging by the singles I mentioned earlier, this is going to be one to watch. She's been releasing some excellent tracks, but I've already told you that, and I'm hoping that continues. Ali and AJ are also going to be bringing out a new album in 2021, from what I've seen, which I'll be keeping an eye on. Same with Marina, of course, you know I'll be waiting to see what she does. And, of course, surprise album releases are probably going to be a thing too, because they always are, along with stuff that just, you know, hasn't been announced yet, and they'll announce later. I do want to continue my broadening of music taste into 2021 by exploring more different artists and genres. I want to go back to some of the artists I discovered this year and look at their past work, like Chloe and Halle's first album and Rina Sawayama's debut EP. I also want to pick up new artists and recommendations, particularly in the realm of R&B, but also some more rap. I've heard some great things about a bunch of female rappers that I'd like to explore the work of, and overall, I just want to keep broadening my musical palette. It's great liking what I like, but it's also great to challenge myself once in a while, because as we've seen in this episode, I can find some real favorites from challenging myself. So, from the future of music to the future of this podcast. Of course, this episode is the season one finale of Ireland at the Strongest Best, and I can't wait to take some properly scheduled time to recharge and start working on some new topics for episodes. I would say to expect about a month or two for the break, just so I can take that time out, but rest assured, I'm always thinking of these new episode ideas and trying my best to take on more topics. I'm actually in the middle of planning the first episodes of season two, which I'm really excited to put out. I've got a pretty nifty plan for the start of the season, and that plan is... Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm not revealing my future plans because I've done that enough times to realize that most of the time shit never turns out the way you planned. So I'm leaving it as a mystery. Huzzah! If you do want to harass me for the answer, I can't stop you, but make sure you at least follow my social medias before you do it. Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and of course the podcast's home on Anchor. You can subscribe to the podcast so you can have those first episodes delivered to your feed with no fuss, no stress. And if you want to leave a review, you can still do that depending on the platform. Still not sure which ones it's possible on, 15 episodes in, but that's neither here nor there. You can even share the podcast to all your friends on social media through some handy links. Don't forget, if you want to check out any of my music recommendations, feel free to do that at your own pace, of course. I highly encourage it. And of course, thank you for listening to this episode, my frequent triers, and until next time, which is definitely not next week, keep trying your best, everyone. Bye for now.